Oh, it's time for the Trump Report, Trump Report, Trump Report, Trump Report with Dr. Frank Tamburi. We're still up in northern, on the border of the Columbia River and Canada here in Washington State. Yeah, last Saturday we went to a Spokane rally that had over 6,500 people there. And it was just, you know, we got to bring the love bus and do a bunch of signs and got to talk and everything. And it was amazingly, you know, middle finger to the man, I can tell you that. And there's for every action equal and opposite. I tell you, for a lot of the draconian crap that's going on, you know, here it comes. And yesterday, what was the, you know, headline? YouTube has banned all anti-vax everything from YouTube. If you're not with the program, you're off, man. Boom. They're not dicking around anymore. And I'm going, okay, well, here we go. So this has been, I just getting over being sick. It took a good 2 weeks to be through it, probably a peak of 3 days. And it was really just not a respiratory thing with me as much as just an energy thing. It was like, you are laying down and never getting up until I let you. But it was, you know, not the worst I've had. It was just different. It's kind of weird. And then let's see what else is going on. There's a community up here, you know, Dr. Frank knows about, is rocking and rolling and whatnot. And we're having new young people coming up and working, getting paid and building community and filling in all the gaps that are necessary. And all of a sudden they need concrete. You know, we get a cement truck and, you know, supplier, and we do the concrete business now, you know. So it's happening, but I'm just, you look at the news and you go, damn, I need to talk to Dr. Frank.
Well, I don't know how much I can bring to this. It feels like, yeah. Well, first of all, welcome everyone back, I guess, for me. I appreciate some of the notes I got from many of you about, you know, well wishes and all. Yeah, the Trump Report, I'll tell you, you know, there's a number of things to chat about. I mean, first off, a little bit about the experience with COVID. And I don't have to explain to everybody because a lot of you have already had it. But just some notes on it, especially now that Ernie's gone through it too. But some of the things I learned about it, the antibodies, we wound up getting the antibody shot. That was a whole interesting experience watching how the government was changing that. Then, of course, there's all of the these requirements and changes just over the last, you know, number of weeks. You know, that was interesting. You know, when you go normally in normal times, whenever that was, when you get sick. When you get sick, you know, you just take it easy. You turn on TV, maybe you watch the ball game, you watch a movie, you just kind of like chill out and, you know, just, you know, heal. You know, you're kind of checked out from the world a little bit. But in today's world, you can't escape from it. So even for all those couple weeks where I was just out of it, you try to put on the television, it's Biden, you know? I mean, you put on a YouTube channel, at least all the channels that keep coming up on my phone, everything is around COVID. I mean, it could be whether it's from a liberal channel, a convention, a conservative, even things that are not political. Even my sites talking about the pop culture, they're talking about the coof, as they call it, you know, how it's affecting, you know, the movies. It goes on and on. It's like you can't escape it. I mean, the country is breaking apart. And I'm sitting there, you know, just laid out, and with all these things, I'm sure with many of you, you know, feeling like the world's falling apart, and there's so many things that you want to do, and you feel like there's not enough time in the day to do it. And at the same time, you can't escape. You can't mentally. I couldn't relax, is what I'm getting to, because you couldn't escape it anyway. I'll leave it there. I realize how different that it's been. And then on top of that, of course, I have been getting inundated, and my wife as well, being doctor, as the all these healthcare workers that we know are all getting forced out or having to make decisions or having to get religious exemptions. So we're getting hit from that end as well, especially, as most of you know, of late. I actually got a long conversation with a activist in Freedom's Phoenix. I won't mention on the air right now, but this person works in healthcare up in the Prescott area. And he was telling me last night about
his initials are Andrew Strimmick. I've been talking about him a lot already.
Anyway, well, he was talking about the numbers of healthcare workers up in Prescott Valley, that whole area, a bunch of hospitals, and how screwed they are. How some of the hospital administrators were chatting about, like, let's just say ways that a certain person up there has heard through management and such about this problem. To give you an example, he was saying that there were about 2,200 employees up in that, for that community of doctors and nurses and, healthcare workers. And about 1,100 have been refusing the jab, right? And then of the 1,100, about 700 of them did receive a religious exemption, which seems pretty high ultimately, but it shows you how desperate that they are. They're holding on to it. And then on top of that, of course, the difference from the 700 from the 1,100 is about 400, which are looking like that they're all going to be fired. So so you have a huge percentage of people that either have gone or they're having to bend over a little bit in order to hold on to them. That's kind of where the quandary is. And if they're holding on to how many for religious exemptions, why wouldn't they give religious exemptions to the other 400? Regardless, they're still looking at so many at a shortage that they already have now anyway. That what they're talking about is, first of all, a lot of the nurses, when they're leaving now because they realize not only that they don't want the BS, but they can go into the free market and become traveling nurses. And traveling nurses, that's becoming a huge industry. So for a lot of people who are afraid about losing their job, there's many opportunities out there now, especially with the internet and just the changes and how the economy works. Going solo, thought about it myself. There's so many different options out there. And I think a lot of people, who just are so used to just collecting a check, I tell you this, sometimes this might be the kick in the butt for people to go on their own. But anyway, traveling nurses, they're making a heck of a lot more money than they did in healthcare, and word's getting out there. So all the nurses are going, wait a minute. So I could stay here and be forced against my will to have this injection. Whether you got the vaccine voluntarily or not, is that now that all these other people are going to be fired, that means more work for you. And that's the second problem that's hitting all these workers, not just in healthcare, but around the country, is that you're getting, all the people that are leaving, there's already an employee shortage anyway. Now you're going to fire even more people because of this draconian mandate. Or cowardice, everyone look at it. And so now these people that are left over working have to work like double hours, and they don't want, and they're like, are you kidding me? I got to work harder now. So now those people are starting to leave. So it's just a cascading effect of what we're finding. And then you've got these, I was saying that these, the RNs, he was pointing out that a lot of the people are the nurses, because the nurses are really the front line. And I even tell my medical students, always be nice to the nurses. Now I have to say, politically, I'm starting to have a bad taste in my mouth with nurses, because, if there's one group that is the stereotypical blue-haired checkmark lefty, it's a nurse. It's, a hospice nurse, and if some of you conservatives out there are nurses, I apologize. I think you guys are like, pretty rarer than gold and platinum, I'll tell you. But most of them, for some reason, nursing seems to get very liberal-minded people. I'm going to tell you why. I've often said that if I was on death's bed, and I'm not being funny, I've said this for years, if I was going to be on death's bed and, you're in hospice, I want a hospice nurse who voted for Bernie Sanders. I don't want a hospice nurse who voted for Donald Trump. I'll just be honest. and I really kind of mean this. Hospice nurses, when you need that kind of care, people who come from the lefty perspective, not to get jump off topic too much, but they think with their heart, not their head. That's the problem with these people. But it's all about, the emotions. But in many ways, it makes them, whether we find it, you know, a smart way of looking at the world, but makes them extremely compassionate, at least compassionate in their own eyes. That's one of the problems, is that they just assume everything they have is their compassion. How can you say anything against their compassion? Why can't we have all the illegals come here? I mean, they have it worse than we do. And why should we be so spoiled, and we should share? And how can you be against that concept? Because I have compassion. Or how could you be against the smoking ban? Do you want you know, old men with cigars blowing in the face of little children at Chuck E. Cheese? How could you think anything opposite of that? You know, it's compassion. You can't say anything about it. You're just a Nazi who wants to smoke in kiddies' faces. Like, they can't think outside of this emotional context. So in a way, it makes them great healers. They really make great nurses. So there, it really is why I think that nursing gravitates that group of people. Now, doctors are kind of a whole different deal. You know, I think with physicians, you know, you don't always get compassion because the medical school doesn't root for people for compassion. Matter of fact, they don't do anything about bedside manner. It's all about how you do on your SAT, your MCATs, and then you know, and who you know, usually get yourself in the medical school for conventional medical school. And you know, it's really about math, which is kind of ridiculous because you don't use it when you're in medicine for that much. But anyway, and doctors have been the least involved in anything. I mean, just, I was talking to the mystery person that you mentioned the other night. I was just saying how when Obamacare was getting passed, I don't know if you guys remember, we heard from every group of individuals. We heard from we heard from the nurses union. We heard from the pharmaceutical industry about Obamacare, you know, what their stance was. We heard from the AARP. We heard from politicians. We heard from Americans. We heard from the one group you never heard from for the entire debate were the doctors. You never heard the physicians groups come out and say if they're for it or not. They're a bunch of lazy, they just sit back and they're like, well, as long as I get my check and I don't want to rock the boat. And most doctors, and I won't go in this long form again, but as I said in your show some time ago, it was a while ago now, you know, doctors are usually people that have been told their whole life how smart they are. You know, it's all they were. You know, I know, I hang out with these guys. You know, it's like you're in high school and junior high school and your mommy says how smart your kid is. And I'm going to be their son's going to be a doctor or a lawyer, you know, and your whole life. And you're always breaking the curve and you just make your way through school. Then you get into medical school and then you get a residence or residency. And then after that, an internship, you just kind of just work up the road there. And then next thing you know, you inherit the patients of the doctor that you worked under. And then they're all sent to you by insurance. And then all of a sudden you're making money. And you just, it's just, I don't want to say it's easy street, but I mean, it's a lot of work, but in a different way. The thing is, doctors have never signed a paycheck. They've never had a lemonade stand. They've never taken a break. They've never traveled the world. I mean, most of them, I mean, yeah, maybe vacations when they're a doctor, but I mean, they didn't take time off to really see the world and experience things. They just go from school to school to school to school. I mean, since grade school, and all of a sudden they're just treating patients. They've never been in the world. So it's really interesting about that, about doctors, you know, and yet they're so used to everyone bowing down to them that they're a doctor and no one questions them. And they just assume that they're right with everything. And that was what was interesting, is that if they're so right about everything else, and they think that, I know that, but they never had an opinion about Obamacare. It's because they really don't understand politics and economics really at all. That's why doctors make worse businessmen, as I'm sure many of you know. So anyway, get off that topic, but just wanted to give you the culture of medicine in general and you know, who these people are. And now they're being confronted with this entire, you know, mandate and how to handle it. So one of the things that's happening is the RNs, going back to this, the RNs are quitting. Now, RNs are the registered nurses. RNs are like premium nurse. You know, it used to be there was just nurses and doctors. Now there's like 10 different forms of nurses. You know, there's registered nurses and there's licensed practitioner nurses and there's this and that. And of course, physician assistants, which are kind of up there. There's all sorts of other forms of nursing. And, you know, this has been an issue with healthcare, you know, just trying to take away obligations of different groups. You know, they keep diluting all the different licenses to make them more subdivided, and then each group has less autonomy, and therefore the system runs things. you know, rather than individuals. They've done a lot to just kind of dilute what each of these licenses are. But anyway, and this is getting to what I think might be happening soon, and to the problem of all of us. But you have registered nurses quitting in mass, and a lot of them are the blue hair checkmark lefties. You know, a lot of these nurses, you know, to their credit, I mean, they're not Trumpers, but you know, they also have real issues with the vaccine. When you're on the front lines and you're seeing this, you know, the nurses are saying, when most of us we're on the front lines. We already gave ourselves up for this. You know, most of us already got sick. We already have natural antibodies. And a lot of the nurses really have issues with these kind of drugs. Like, a lot of nurses are into alternative medicine. Tons of nurses are, heck, you've got a lot of nurses doing Reiki and crystal therapy, for God's sake. You know, so you've got people all over the map, but a lot of these nurses are quitting. But they're the ones that have a full license, is what I'm trying to get to. And they're the most valuable in a hospital, especially since doctors are kind of being sidelined. I mean, nurses do a lot, most of the grunt work. I mean, most of it. Well, now that they're quitting, they have a problem. Well, so now what they're doing is what I heard the other day at a couple of these hospitals is that they are hiring the whole new gaggle of graduates of LPNs, which are, I think, the licensed I forget what the P stands for, licensed practitioner nurse, I think it is. But they're like a step down, a whole step down. So these LPNs, they don't have full autonomy. They can't set up IVs, so they can't do IVs. That's a big one, right? Nurses can do IVs, but an LPN can't. Also, an LPN cannot officially give out medication. They can't actually. So basically, a registered nurse can administer medication on behalf of the doctor. An LPN cannot do that. An LPN is more like a helper of a regular nurse, okay? They can't actually connect the wire, for instance, the tubing for an IV. You know, they could put all the medicine in the IV, I believe, but they can't actually connect it to you. So you know, that's a big deal. Well, they're hiring LPNs to fill in the gaps of all these nurses. Well, that's a huge thing once you understand what the deal is, because they can't legally do things. So what does that mean? It means you have all these, you know, untrained, so to speak, people that like technically can't do a lot, and they're going to all be under these registered nurses. And RNs can maybe, I think, like, for one RN, there's like maybe two LPNs that are under them. Now they have like four of them. Well, four of these people just run around after them. Technically, they can't do anything. Now, question is, you know, of course that's the concern for them right now. And they're saying, well, what's going to happen now? You're going to have all these registered nurses that are left over having to carry more of the load because all the other RNs left. And then you have LPNs that they don't know what to do with all these people, but they're saying, hey, that this is your new help. Just like in New York City, you guys, I'm sure, heard recently that they're so short of nurses that they're bringing in the National Guard. The National Guard. So now to do their job. So now you sit back and you go, okay, so we got the National Guard administering medications or somehow doing the role of an RN. Then you're going to have LPNs that I think ultimately are going to be grandfathered in because the government, you know, they're not going to let their own rules get in the way of just getting stuff done. So, which is the scary thing. So if you don't have enough RNs, you know, they're probably going to knight these LPNs into RNs, just like King Arthur knighted Percival at the last minute, made him a knight. So, hey, defend the queen. You know, I don't care about the rules. It's like, yeah, and I told you on your show last month, we talked about the DOs. And so this audience, I'm sure a lot of you heard, you know, I won't do the story long again, but the short version is that the DOs, the doctors of osteopathic medicine that many of you might see, you know, they got their ability to do surgery and themselves. Because back in World War II, they were not allowed to do surgery. I think they could prescribe drugs, but they could not do surgery. But what happened was that all the medical doctors, or many of them, were drafted to help the boys overseas. So all the MDs went overseas. We had a doctor shortage. And so the government said, well, we need doctors. And they turned to the DOs. But the DOs couldn't do surgery. They said, well, you know what? We'll teach you how to do surgery. And that's how the DOs all of a sudden automatically just got the license or the ability to do other things outside their scope. And it hasn't changed, hasn't gone back. So I think, you know, and we saw this when COVID broke out. You know, they were thinking about, and they were in certain states, they were drafting medical students. They were getting fourth year medical students and making them graduates like 6 months before their graduation. They were just doing early graduations just to get them out there to help out. I don't know if you remember that back during the COVID, when it first started. So it wouldn't surprise me, you know, if the government just starts lifting rules and regulations, it doesn't matter. Well, you know, because they're that desperate right now. You know, National Guard. So when you're at that point, I mean, I'm assuming most of you out there are now thinking, well, wait a minute, what does that mean for me as a patient? You mean I'm going to a hospital that's short-staffed, they don't have enough people. The place up in Prescott, you know, when this person had asked, well, what's going to happen to these patients when we don't have enough nurses? They said, well, we're going to have to shut down. They are technically shutting down parts of the hospital, literally, because they don't have enough staff. So they said, well, where are we going to do? What are we going to do with these patients that are already here and new ones that are coming in? They said, well, we just can't do it. We're going to ship them down to Phoenix. So if you're sick up in the Prescott area, they're going to be shipping you down to Phoenix. The problem is Phoenix has the same problem. Their nurses now are being told they have to do double duty and do this and do that. And some of them are just being resentful. They have to get the jab. And anyway, and a lot of them are going to be leaving and doing traveling nursing. And I mean, the whole, it's like this whole medical system is falling apart.
Is it so, intentional?
Anyway, I was just going to point out that with all that said, what does this mean for patient care? You know, that's my concern, not even as a doctor, but as a patient myself, you know, if you get sick, which I was just, you know, in the system recently from this COVID. But I mean, I didn't go to the hospital, but, you know, that's another story. But I'm just pointing out that what you start to feel like you're really all alone out there and the medical system does not have your back. And you're going to have unqualified people giving you medications and IVs and whatever the hell else. And that's just a whole other component of going into this depression that we're about to see. So anyway, that's just kind of the long form of the all these changes and what these draconian things are happening and with these medical exemptions. You know, we're going to see it. I think ultimately we are at that line, the so-called Mexican standoff, you know, and the government has played, you know, they said, oh, there's the carrot and the stick. The carrot didn't work as well as we thought, so now we're doing the stick. As I said, if you have to go to the stick, regardless, it means you never had the carrot. And that is what these people have done. And now, you know, they are going for broke, and they're trying to assert their authority. And ultimately, this is not about medicine. I'm sure most of you know. It's about control. None of this is about medicine anymore. It's about compliance. It's about take the knee and are you on our team or the others? And by going through this complete this purge is what it's turning into. They are following the footsteps of history. The history that used to say about the washed and the unwashed. Put people in two different classes. And we've heard this before when a certain group of people, I think they're called Jews, and they were associated with the unwashed and rats and the plague. And all these words are put together to make them seem dirty and that there's people to stay away from and eventually also then they have concentration camps. And they're doing that now. They're doing that in Australia, I'm sure you know. They're setting up essentially concentration camps for people who are sick or not vaccinated. I mean, and you hear the news and the concept of this despicable excuse for a president sitting there, you know, calling this, you know, a pandemic of the unvaccinated, right? So now you've got class warfare that they're bringing up and this hate that's coming from their side as this thing unravels. Anyway, that's my opening monologue. Have you heard from other people on your show from the medical system about this falling apart?
Yes. The big thing is as with everything, it's getting more and more decentralized. And now if you got a small community, instead of going to the regional hospital or something like that, they're more looking at different clinics. And one of the doctors in Prescott just said, screw it. He's going with some friends and opening a practice in Montana because they don't have any of the requirements. So I'm seeing the same thing in these communities. There, you know, we have a little red brick house for the school marm to teach the community kids, and we got a teacher, then we got a barber that pulls teeth, and a freaking doctor that'll set bone, you know? And that's what I think is going to happen. They're going to go back to community doctors, you know, house calls and little black bags and being part of the community and not so isolated. And probably
they're going to become naturopaths.
Right. You know, so I see it as inevitable. This is, you know, what doesn't work won't continue. I mean, it's just not working. And when we talked to Andrew back a few weeks ago, I think the deadline was September 22nd, and it got moved back to November 1st, I think. And Cottonwood has a hospital there that they're threatening they're going to have to close or ship people to the Yavapai Center in Prescott there. And then, well, they can't be there. They got to go to Phoenix, and Phoenix has got the same problems. So they're pushing this. And I'm wondering, the end result is they don't care, I guess. The Biden administration is going, and then what do I see in headlines is that, oh, you know, as Biden's popularity plummets, Kamala rises. I'm like, right.
So, right.
You know, this is, you know, and a lot of it is going to come down to economics. And I did watch, oh, okay, you're going to chastise me. As I'm sick, I'm like, all right, you know, I'll pay for a movie or something, right? And I've been holding off on Black Widow because you could only buy it at like $29 or something, right? So I'm like, screw that. So yeah, it gets down to $19.99. So I go, all right, I'll buy the director cut and the Whippy Dippy and Donna Nile will have a movie night. So I watch Black Widow, and it sucked.
I told feeling, you, Ernie, you never listened to my movie reviews channel.
Oh, man, it was so bad. And, you know, but I mean, it had all the action, super-duper, blah, blah, blah. But then I just watched the, because there's always, you know, more at the end after the credits kind of thing. And director's cut and everything. And then it got into, you know, why they made the movie and the female director of females and it's all female thing. And I go, you know, you guys just can't not screw something up, you know. And Scarlett Johansson did her job. You know, the other actors and so on did their job. It was just, I didn't like it. I really was looking forward to it. And it was just so superficial. I don't know what, just dumb. You know, and so I was really disappointed in that. And I tell you what, I just watched last night at 2 this afternoon, I interview Foster Gamble from Procter & Gamble family, and he did a movie called Thrive about a decade ago that was really good. And he kind of got understanding of what was really going on from his son that was a big Ron Paul guy. And it finally, he's looking for the truth and solutions of whatever, and his son explained it to him and showed him Austrian economics and Ron Paul speeches and, you know, non-aggression principle and, you know, all the truthisms that he needed to round out his worldview. And he wanted to create kind of a movement or something, but I don't think he was ready then. And but this time, Thrive 2, I really enjoyed that documentary. And you got to pay $20 to watch it or rent for six or something like that, be affiliate. I mean, they're, you know, going to milk it. But it was really, 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 really good. It was 2.5 hours. And I'm looking forward to talking to him because, you know, of all the stuff that's going on, you know, there's a solution. There's always going to be a response to this kind of crap. And it's going down to, I remember in The Matrix, the third one, where you can't kill us all off, you need us to survive. And the architect goes, well, we're willing to take a level of, you know, survival that you may not know or something like that, to where, you know, how, what are you looking for? And it's what I always say, you know, you don't be too hot, too cold, too hungry, too thirsty. You know, you can, there's a level, we have enough technology and materials now that we can live a very comfortable life and, you know, go retro a little bit and, you know, just, you know, dial it back some and live a lot healthier, eat a lot better, have a lot more social interaction and less brain damage and, you know, mental health issues, and our bodies be a lot better, getting away from a lot of the crap. But they, you know, shiny objects and carrots and sticks and doing whatever incentives and punishments to try and get you controlled. And I'm thinking people are going, I'm good. You know, we're going to do something different. And then they lose centralized control. Well, that was one of the focuses in the Thrive 2, is that decentralization of everything. And when you watched it, I'm just like, holy crap. You know, Foster must have, like, listened to a bunch of libertarians or something. So, in fact, they have, Stephen Molyneux and Larkin Rose and Mary Ruart and whatever, you know, have little cameos in there talking about different things. So I'm excited about talking to him today, because I'm thinking that a lot of the stuff that we've been in advocating for and anticipating is going to happen is happening in spite of all of the freaking crap that's coming out of the administration in Washington, D.C. And these mandates and so on, I'm not seeing it taking hold. And even here where you have the liberal government of Washington state, it's always at least half of the people everywhere around the country are like, no. And they'll go, oh, we win and we're got the shiny badges or we got a majority or whatever. Doesn't matter when you got anywhere from, you know, at least 15% to, oh my God, 50% of the people going, nah, we're not accepting it. It's not sustainable. So, but then what happens? They get into economics. It's going to be a food thing. You know, they shut down the supply chain. So what they're doing up here in Washington is they're in negotiations now to buy the local grocery store. They're going to be putting in a butchery. You know, they're going to be growing some more different kind of livestock.
Wait. Ernie, when you said they, who's they? The people or the government? Who are you talking about?
Our friends.
Oh, your friends. Okay.
You know, they're driving a lot of this. And one thing, there was an older guy that had the only concrete cement mixer service in this area is going out of business or retiring or something. They go, well, I guess we got a new business, you know, so we need concrete, so let's get on it. And I just did a show yesterday with a young man as an interview coming up. We got, there's three people, a girl and two young guys that we've met around the country and so on that are up here now that are digging it. Then they have me interview some of their friends, and we talk to them, you know, record that, and then they're getting an invitation to come up. And one young woman in her early 30s was just cruising Telegram looking for like-minded people in Seattle. She goes, I can't be the only person. I mean, oh, my God. And she works for a nonprofit there doing whatever, but she's more conservative. But she was, you know, heavily liberal, indoctrinated, but just looking for the truth, and finds that she's been lied to, and came across our friend on a group here, got invited, and now she's up here looking to buy, you know, a fourplex apartment complex up there. She rent out the other three. And so this community up here is really starting to hit. And it's getting to where they got such an advance preparation for years, decades, you know, ahead of everybody else, that they're really doing. And their buffalo herd is up to 13 now. And I'm like, damn. You know, I'm sitting here looking at them now, looking down on the field. So all the things that you'd want to practice, you know, with soil remediation and different ways of no-till plowing and them feeding the soil and everything, they're doing it here. I'm looking at this, like, acre garden they got out here, and for 2 weeks there's been two women out there harvesting everything. You know, it's just amazing how much food has come out of just this one small area, of which is what they serve, too. So I'm not thinking it's going to happen. We've been watching it develop over the years up here, and this is in freaking Washington State where it's freaking cold, you know? And they're making a go of it. Oh, they got a second greenhouse that they're putting in, but they built it into the ground. The other one, you go in there, and it's tropical warm. And what they've done is they put these big culverts, like 3-foot culverts, vertically into the ground about every 10 feet along a 60-foot-long greenhouse that goes down like 20 feet in the ground, because they're using the heat and the warmth of the earth to keep their citrus plants growing in the winter when there's snow outside the greenhouse. And I'm going, okay, there's that. And so this has been an experiment and just planting a whole bunch of different fruit trees and everything. They're going to be able to feed themselves. And one of the things that they pull behind their tractor, they got a big tractor they've had for a long time, really nice. I mean, you know, buy a new attachment, man, we can do whatever. And they got a new thing. It's like, God, it has to be at least 16, 20 feet wide. And it's a crimper. It's not a plow. It's just a wheel that has ridges in it that you just pull behind you, and it presses down the stalks and all the whatever crop that you have, and then crimps the stalk, you know, to kill it so it doesn't, you know, grow or whatever. But there's no plow, ground cover farming kind of thing. So they're not plowing the fields. They keep adding different cover crops and just, you know, rolling it down and building the soil. So then some of the guys that came up, the young guys, they're all excited about using mycelium and different ways to improve the soil. So they're got plenty of places here to play with and practice, and it's all about food production. And I'm really impressed. And we watched this grow over decades, and it's gotten to the point now that they need bodies. And it's not just a community to live here on the property, it's the town. So the town, they go in and say, all right, we need to buy this building to be a grocery store, this one to be, you know, a slaughterhouse, this is going to be, you know, the butchery. It's going to be like a small town where you went to the general store. When I was a kid, you used to go grocery shopping, and then you went to the butcher, you know, and it was a separate store. It may have been across the street or next door. It wasn't until, you know, later that all these different supermarkets would come in and they had the butchery inside the grocery store. So there's a lot to be said for that, because, you know, that's what they specialize in. And it's not just when you go to the store, there's not a wide variety, you know, other than pork and beef. And I'm seeing that this spring, this isn't the only place. It's the one that's the most advanced. I give it that. But they're, Donna and I travel in the country looking for these places. In fact, there's a service that we have. It's called Harvest Host. And Harvest Host is about wineries and microbreweries and little farms and dairies and all that kind of stuff, and even golf courses that you go to camp overnight for free. You get 24 hours of I pull in my RV, and the deal you have is that you buy $20 worth of their crap. I mean, you know, you get you know, some cheese, some meat, some honey, some whatever it is that they do, and it's always organic, and it's always, you know, done right there, and it's always great. And us going around the country, I'm seeing it happen. So when they put the screws to everybody and say, we're going to make you take the vaccine, we're going to make you, you know, get your credit score, we're going to make you do your contact tracing app. We're going to make you. I'm going, yeah, you keep doing that, and you're going to bifurcate the country. And it's already splitting anyway. And then, as it always is, it's the producers and the people that do things and the other people waiting for somebody to do it for them. And the productive people will thrive and survive, and the other people won't. And then they'll get guns and they'll be butt heads. So I can see that, like the Trudeau election cycle, they were trying to get a mandate and, you know, we're in control and we're going to make everybody comply with whatever it is that they want to have happen. But even if they had a bigger majority, it doesn't matter. It's 20% of the people do 80% of the work kind of thing. And I don't really understand where this is going, other than it's a distraction for what's going to happen financially. You know, this is the dollar and inflation is hitting. Here we go. So I don't know where this is going, but I'm not sure an election's going to fix anything. You know, the audit that they had in Maricopa County, anything coming out of that, one side claiming victory over the other, anybody give a crap, Frank? Yeah, unmute yourself. Frank. You got to unmute.
Yeah. No, sorry about that. I would say a lot of people give a damn up here, at least, and maybe because I'm in the thick of it in Arizona, although I am hearing, a number of channels, you know, national channels talking about it in different ways. I think maybe we care about it a bit more than certain libertarians, name Ernie and Tim, and some of you others listening to that out there. But I'll tell you that, I guess some of you probably have heard by now, it's been a week or so since all this. And it's been, honestly, guys, the news has been sort of like a blur over the last number of weeks through this whole COVID thing, which maybe later we'll talk about the experience about it. But now, as far as the audit, I would say both sides, as predictable, are trying to claim victory over it. Ultimately, it shows enough corruption to undermine the system. The left has been who sat there and said, oh, the audit is a scam, there's nothing to it, don't look over here, everyone has to look away. Now that once the audit was concluded, they ran with their story and then tried to shut it down immediately. It's like they tried to claim ownership of it and shut it down. And what their claim was that the actual hand recount, which was one of the first things that they did with this, I believe, but the actual hand recount did not show a difference. In fact, it actually showed more votes for Biden by a handful, whatever. But they actually showed just an extra votes for Biden with the hand recount. Of course, the audit had nothing to do with just doing a hand recount. That's just the simplistic overture. That's not what we want. It was the forensic audit that this was about, and the computer systems and the signature matches and all of that. That's what people wanted. But, of course, the left, they just – I mean, at this point, it doesn't even matter what they say. They're just bastards, and they lie. And it's just – I don't have the words for it at this point. But no, that's how that they just spun it, that the hand recount went through, and it showed that that Biden did not Biden won because he won the hand recount. Anyway, that's kind of their main spin. But the main finding, it seemed, and guys, I'm many of you out there probably follow more than me at this point, but is that they found that there was enough signatures, signature discrepancies, and enough problems with other ballots that there was a margin of error. In other words, there were so many questionable ballots that should never have been counted. That so the audit did specifically point this out, that in theory, since they're all thrown out, those number of ballots being thrown that should have been thrown out or not authenticated were over and above the margin of error that Biden won over Trump. So therefore, it's all questionable. And of course, in order to get that information, I think there's two stumbling blocks. One is that these people erased, you know, the computer systems the day before the audit. I mean, that should be the lead story of all the news. I mean, just the fact that they're doing that. I mean, and that's on top of months and months of delay tactics. I mean, just the cat and mouse that they played. I mean, this is the election. I mean, it should be, you know, we would like to do an audit. Sure, no problem. Here it is. I mean, that's as simple as this should have been. And yet it went on and on and on, and all the tactics and hiding the machines and this and that and hiding the codes. And then when they finally were going to do the audit, you know, the people, whoever were the custodians of it, the part of the man, turned around and erased the systems. And you know, I mean, it's all bets are off at that point. So that's one of the main issues there. So anyway, I'm rambling a little bit, but I think it has opened up a number of can of worms. First off, from what I understand, because of the computer problem and some of the, you know, not turning over the codes and things like that, it has now escalated now because of the report proving that there were enough anomalies that this should not have been certified, that the election should not have been certified based off of that. Now, from last I heard, is that there's another uprising here in the same activists. And people, a lot of Tea Party people, Trump representatives in the local Congress and our local senators, you know, there's a lot of banding together of going after, I think it was the Secretary of State and the County Recorder's Office. And because ultimately, guys, we're kind of hitting that Mexican standoff again. It's almost like this is a larger issue, but, it, you know, our country's starting to get to that point where, it's like, you know, one person throws insults to one person. The other person says, oh, yeah, well, your mama backed. And you go back to a bunch of your mamas. And that was like maybe the 90s and the 2000s, you know. And then the last like 5 years, you know, it turns into the shoving match. Then you start shoving each other. And then at what point do you either back down and someone says, OK, you're right. Or someone then throws the first punch. And I'm telling you, I think we all feel it. We're just
pulls
at
the
that
first
point.
Gun.
Yeah. And it just feels that way on all these areas, you know, between the COVID thing and the lockdowns and the shot mandate and this audit. I mean, in all different areas, it's like everything's coming to a point where there's no more breathing room to try to maneuver or trust the system. And when people just feel the system's broken down, I mean, no one gets arrested for anything. I mean, although we just see criminals and politicians, same thing. And the media just lie to our face. It's like, this is nothing matters. And that's the part that's scary when, I mean, libertarians, we've known this for a long time, right? But when the average American finally wakes up and realizes that this security blanket of society and how things work is breaking down. And that's what I'm seeing. I'm seeing average, regular people. I'm sure all of you know family members and all that are getting, if not red pilled, they're just getting frustrated. They're throwing their hands up. And that, and this is all another load of topics, that is on top of how many relationships are getting blown apart. And I tell you, I'm, you know, I keep hearing about people who, you know, their wives are lefties. It's never the guys. It's always the women, you know, but the wives are all of a sudden lefties in the last couple of years, you know, and they're divorcing their husbands or they're forcing them out. They're forcing men to sleep in the other bed. I mean, this is I haven't heard many people talk about it, but I have run into so many people going through this right now. And it didn't hit me at first, because most of my friends are libertarians, you know, people like yourself and others. And you know, we've had a little easy because, well, maybe we have it easy now. We didn't have it easy before when we were dating, perhaps, because people like us were opinionated from the beginning. So none of us would have been with a lady that is going to be probably some lefty and this and that, or a lot of times not even politically active. You know, for many of us, you know, we're with people who understand us and we have the same viewpoints. So going through this process, I have to say, I just want to point out to all of us and for our spouses, we have to thank our spouses. You know, if many of us are still in the in the same, you know, ourselves, our children haven't turned on us, you know, because we had a solid foundation from the beginning, you know, and who we chose as partners. But for a lot of Americans, moderates and independents and people just, you know, the milquetoast fence sitters, these are the people who a lot of us don't really associate with. You know, most of my friends are not politically neutral. They, you know, I get a little bored. I'm sure a lot of you kind of know what I'm talking about. But these are the people, the moderates, that are getting torn apart because, you know, they never really took a stand before. And now this nation and the culture is just ripping apart. It's like it's forcing people in the middle of the road to take a stand, which, I mean, you can't just sit this out anymore. You're being forced into one view or the other as the two sides, especially the left, is just battling down, going for broke. I mean, they don't care at this point. They're not even trying to hide it. They know that they're going for broke, and they have a year and a half, whatever, in order to do whatever that they want to do before the midterms. And of course, that it also includes rigging the next set of elections if they can do it. And that's a whole loaded topic I don't want to get into with you right now. But the thing is, you know, I still think that I know that they believe they can still lose it. They don't own it all yet. The shenanigans they pulled off last time, they know they're not going to get away with this time. Now, and they might come up with something else. But the thing is, I think this audit here, going back to the audit in Arizona, really opened up a can of worms with other states that are now joining in on it. And I forget how many states now are doing audits. I mean, Georgia, Pennsylvania, I mean, a bunch of them are all now, they're all doing their same thing. And if nothing else, it's forcing them to look at how the system operates or doesn't.
Yeah, so, no, I don't trust them doing any legitimate. It's just a political thing. You might as well just say Republican versus Democrat. This issue is just they're doing it wrong. We got to have, and they're not really going to fix it. This is why I was calling BS on it in Arizona. Because, you know, you got Ken Bennett, which was president of the Senate and secretary of state, all of a sudden is going to fix it now. And I'm like, no, he's not. You know, this is done. You know, I don't, maybe some local elections you might be able to get something. But what are they doing? They're wanting to consolidate all of the local city elections into the county counting them. Then they want to get all the counties to get one county to count them. And then everything's right. Done electronically and push a button and it's said on the Secretary of State's desk. I mean, you know, and approved 5 minutes later. This whole thing is not sustainable. And it all comes down to economics. This is all a big giant smokescreen for the big giant financial collapse that be a coming, where we got silver in the $21 range. I go, yeah, let's go take a look. I'm going to go see what silver's at. I'm like, holy crap, I can't wait. I got to buy more. So let's see. We got Freedom CNX. You go to the top left, and it says $22. Damn it, it went up 50 cents. Crap. Anyway, so, you know, I had a principal, but to buy it was $29. So you had an $8 premium on it. You know, what the real cost of silver is and what the paper, you know, money ETF crap says it is two totally different things. So there is an enormous disconnect in the real price of silver and what they're manipulating it down to. And I'm going, yeah, this is not going to go well. So I'm wondering, what do you think is going to happen with crypto and precious metals and economy and inflation? Do you do any of your shopping? Have you gone to the supermarket and see what's up?
Actually, just recently, since I did get the monoclonal antibodies, and that actually helped me. I did a little better than my wife. She got it even worse than me. But so anyway, what I'm getting to is it forced me out to do some shopping. She usually does the shopping with the baby. So she's been keeping track on it. I've been asking her every week, you know, just keep, you know, because I do like to talk about it on your show anyway. She hasn't noticed it that much for her. Now, granted, she cost shops at the three different places. So I think she's noticed, you know, a couple shortages, but not much, honestly. Now, I kind of wonder, and this might just be our experience, you know, I'm not too picky with our food. I mean, we want healthy food. She tends to go to Trader Joe's and, like, I mean, we don't go to Whole Foods. That's just way too expensive. And besides, I don't want to feed Jeff Bezos anything else. But she'll go to Sprouts, you know, these natural stores. And they seem to be well-stocked, strangely enough. And maybe it's just because they're premium or they're yuppie supermarkets. She does go to Fry's. That's kind of our Safeway out here in Arizona. I think she may have noticed a couple things. Not too much. I have to say, for me, it did go up quite a bit. And that's because I haven't shopped in a while. So it really was a big shock to me after shopping after a year, for the most part, over the last few weeks. I definitely noticed, you go just to get a couple items and it's, $25 and you walk out with like three things, or you just kind of feel like your shopping cart is not doing the same. Now, granted, we don't really spend much either. I mean, we've always been pretty thrifty, kind of more savings and such. We've never been the ones that travel. I mean, we traveled a lot when we were younger. That, I have to say, that's on a personal note, but that was when Savard and I, we both got that out of our system when we were younger. I went to Japan, I was in China, I was in Philippines, different places, and she grew up in India. So in a way, we got all that out when we were younger. So we don't have that. We'd like to travel when we're a little bit later, but if we're even allowed. So we're glad we got that out of our system. But no, it's interesting how many people they're trying to travel now that they're 50 and 60, the people I know, and now they're being hit with these mandates and such. But the travel, as far as the food prices, go back to your question, I've noticed them a bit. I don't know. It seems like people on the East Coast are getting hit more with it. I think the people in the cities, the supply chain disruptions, I think the people in the cities are getting hit more. Tim Pool was talking about how he was at the store the other day and, they used to have London broil, they don't sell that anymore. A lot of the high end cuts of beef, they said they just they're not going to bother because it's like $25 a pound or something crazy, where people couldn't afford to buy a sandwich. It was just making it too costly, cost prohibitive. So yeah, I was starting to see that.
I got, I'm looking at this one story now. This one UCLA professor is suing because Life Sciences saying that, a professor who was suspended after refusing to grade black students more leniently sues UCLA after the Floyd death and all this other stuff. They were wanting them to reduce the requirements, or you get full points for just taking a test if you're black or something. And he's like, no, I'm not doing that. And they suspend him. And I'm going, this is not sustainable. I just saw that Stanford now is celebrating they have all black dormitories. And I'm old enough to remember they went through, generations trying to eliminate that very thing. And none of the separate but equal stuff. And I don't know where this goes. Is anyone even paying attention to a 22 election cycle? Does anybody care?
Well, I mean, maybe some of the people that I know, but I would say most people are just, I think they're in culture shock. I think a lot of people are starting to get into that mode I've told you would happen, the cognitive dissonance. People are running into depression. I know I have. I'll just be upfront with the audience, and people like you and I have been, preparing for this, have been aware of this almost our entire life. In some ways, there's this relief. It's like, finally, it's here. I've been waiting so long because I'm tired of living, conservatively in a sense. I'm tired of always having that cloud over our future. I mean, granted, I wish I was like most people who just sat back and just went to the ball games and didn't care. And now all of a sudden they're looking around them going, oh, what's going on out there? This is kind of strange. And they're getting forced into jabs and other insecurities they might hit. But for people like myself, I mean, I don't know. I think a lot of us out there, because you see, what's coming. And I think Maybe you might be different, Ernie. And I can't recall exactly my thoughts on this, but I know Peter Schiff talked about it himself, which was, this is going to be worse than even he was thinking. Because, you know, when we looked at the economic collapse, it was usually of America. And, of course, you know, countries that were tied to the dollar. But as the Austrian theory went, is that once the dollar began to sink, you know, all the other countries would be, you know, would be sinking with it. Because as another Peter Schiff analogy, is that all these other countries are boats that are tied to the Titanic, you know, and the Titanic is going down and it's taking all the boats with it. So, you know, once the boats realize this, they start disconnecting, they decouple from the Titanic, from the American dollar, and then all those economies start to float back up, you know. And that's why this whole issue of international currencies and how many of our friends, some of you may be listening right now, you know, are expats. You know, many of you guys, if you had some money, you know, or not, you know, going off to Panama or Costa Rica or wherever. And yet, you know, I mean, how many people that you and I know, Ernie, who are expats, who had the resources, can do all of this. I know some other people that you don't. I'm sure you know people I don't. All running the same boat, where now, you know, as bad as America is, these people that, you know, thought they escaped the system, they're coming back to America. I mean, it's like, how bad is it when you have to come back here,
right,
to the draconian, you know, states of authority? I mean, I have one guy I know, he's in Panama, and he actually lives out in the boonies. He speaks perfect Spanish. He's got like a Panamanian wife. He's been there for like 15 years. He's, you know, he's got like a whole homestead thing in Panama, and yet they're forcing they have the same problems. They're forcing the jab on him, and even in the middle of nowhere, so they're forcing it on that whole area. Not to mention, he's got resources. I think he probably has some gold and some other things. And now the problem is for people like him to get out of the country, because, you know, there are these lockdowns from country to country. Not to mention how can he now get, you know, to get to, he's trying to figure out apparently how to get to Costa Rica, or yeah, he's trying to go over the border to Costa Rica, but that's becoming a problem. And then of course, how to go over the border with certain resources with him. And then if he's staying and stuck in Panama, they're, you know, they're looking at you as all of a sudden the rich expat, you know, and now you start to get, as this, look, this is what we've talked about on this show for a while now, is the nationalism and populism. And it's where countries are going to, and, you know, this the death of globalism is what we hope. Although globalism is going out with one big cluster F, if you know what I'm talking about. They're not going down quietly. They're cornered. And this is their big hurrah. That's what I was saying earlier. They're going for broke. They don't care if you know it. They're tired of hiding it. They have a year or so to just do whatever they want. And then they're going to spend a lot of their time rigging the next election. And the ultimate rig, they're doing right in front of everybody, which is the illegals. I mean, they just blatantly, I mean, just say it. I mean, I'm tired of hearing Tucker Carlson, everyone, sit there and tell us about, oh, the problem at the border. They want it. It's completely, I mean, it's like, why even report it? It's just talk about the government wants open borders. They're just funneling these people in. They're putting them, they're shipping them at taxpayers' expense in military planes, as most of you know, and they're bringing them to red communities. They're trying to reverse what they think is the inappropriate gerrymandering of the conservatives. That's their thing. The left thinks that the right cheats because they change the, you know, they gerrymander. That's, you know, they completely miss the point of having illegals coming here and busing them to red communities, but that's their tactic. And so the one thing people never seem to be talking about, none of the shows I listen to anyway, is the impending Joe Biden or puppet Harris or whoever it's going to be. Guys, I mean, it's like neon flashing, as Ernie would say, is that there is going to be another executive action. And either that, or they're going to finally give Kyrsten Sinema, you know, I hate to bring her up, but her and that other senator, the only two holdouts for the filibuster. So they might have to do something really and buy her off and make her the next candidate for president. I don't know whatever they're going to promise her, but she is playing hardball, and that's a whole other discussion. I know whenever we talk about her on your show, it's a fun topic. But I'll tell you what, she is national news right now. And she is the one of the two senators holding up this filibuster. And if they bust it, if they are able to get rid of the filibuster, then they're going to be loading and packing the courts. I'm telling you, that's what this whole thing is. And they want those. They want to pack those courts and get those Supreme Court guys in that to overthrow the conservative lock, because at that point, then they will ram through however they're going to do it, through either the legislature or an executive action, whatever, to have nationwide amnesty. That is coming within, I think, if not before the 2022 election. I don't know if they're going to be able to do that. They might if they realize there's going to be a red wave. But if not by then, it definitely will be by 2024. But I'm just telling you, I mean, they're blatantly having the borders open. And it's not because it's a mistake when they're funneling them, you know, around the country and doing it in secret. They are doing this on purpose. They just are waiting and waiting, and then they're going to flip the switch, and then bam, the electoral count is all screwed up. And it's just like, I'm just shocked that you sit there, you watch these, even Fox News, which I don't even watch that crap anymore. But you know, whether it's Fox or Newsmax or any of them, they just keep showing drone footage or something of the illegals and the problems and this whole, you know, narrative the liberals spun off on about whipping them with the horse. And I mean, it's just madness. All of this is a distraction of what they're doing. I mean, it's like they cheated last time. And you know, it was like the guns of Avaro, right? Is that how you pronounce it?
Navarone.
Avarone, that's it.
No, Navarone.
You know, JFK talked about it. And, you know, one of the cons of JFK used that when he tried to solve the Cuban Missile Crisis. And he referenced that book. And the point being is that people are often fighting the last war. They can't think forward to the future war. You know, it's just like when we think of the Civil War, most people still think of the Mason-Dixon line, everyone lined up, you know, on this line. And but that's not what a modern Civil War is. It's a different setup. So people may not recognize it because they're thinking something different. And that's kind of how I see this.
Well, what are you planning on doing? How's your property going? You know, tell us.
Before I get into that, I just finish that point. Is that people are thinking in the last war? So in a way, I think many conservatives are going to make the same mistake with the voting, which is they're looking at voter integrity. And yes, these audits and all are important, and it's bringing up all these problems. And yes, I think it's going to shut down the liberals. Or whatever the establishment, I should say, of trying to steal it next time. Meaning, to give an example, if all of a sudden the states all of a sudden shut down counting at midnight, you know, and then they tell everyone to go home, you know. But last time people went home, they're like, well, all right, I guess it's, you know, time to go home. This time they're not going to go home, right? Or if they're going to start putting, you know, paper up on the windows and all. I mean, there's going to be a riot at this point. You know, they're not going to just keep getting pushed around like cattle. This time, they're not going to be able to pull that crap off. I mean, I almost guarantee that. However, that doesn't mean, as everyone's fixated now on trying to fix the problems of the last election, it doesn't mean that's what the left is going to do this time. This time, I believe, like I said, it's going to be about the illegals. And that's what's frustrating. As much as I do want to hear about the audit, and I do want all that, you know, exposed and all of this, the whole election rig is happening right now with the illegals about flipping the switch. And people need to be focusing on what the administration is doing, setting up for an executive action or however legally that they're going to do this to for amnesty. The question is, though, it's all about, again, it's about the Supreme Court. If they don't get the Supreme Court, then they flip the switch with executive action. Well, then what? Well, you know, you're going to have automatic, you know, lawsuits, you know, to the Supreme Court. And, you know, and all you have to do is gum up the works up to the next election. And they can't vote as long as you can gum it up. So that's why it's really, I'll tell you what, Ernie, I would love to think that Kyrsten Sinema is really somewhat, you know, reasonable of a person that she's holding out. But
she's always going to get what she wants.
I know. I always hear you on my shoulder, like the little good and bad angels there. And I always hear you go, Frank, don't fall for it. You don't know cinema like I do. And I do trust your opinion on that. And it's tough because, you know, I'd like to think she's got some balance. But if she's as wily as you claim, then she is a major figure in where this country is going to go, because it is the entire goal of amnesty may very well rest on our senator here in Arizona. That really, I'm seeing that line up, man.
Yeah, no, she's the biggest warning I can give anyone is how determined, focused, intelligent, and socialist she is. You know, and it's going to be, she'll take it and incrementally as any way that she wants. While a lot of people scream ideology of we got to be socialist because socialist and a socialist, she'll, you know, walk it us into the ovens, you know, because that's what she'll do and because she knows how and she plays the game. I mean, she's U.S. Senator. You know, here's someone that was a Green Party socialist activist in the late 90s that worked her way up through, state legislature, Congress, U.S. Senate. I mean, this is somebody that, you know, had the support and had the intelligence and had the philosophical support of the media to do exactly what she did the way she did. And then this filibuster thing is just a hand that she has to get whatever else it is that she wants. And she just knows. And a lot of these other senators and congressmen that are up there trying to play politic game, they pale in significance into her knowing how to really play it. And I've seen her do this for, you know, to the point that she is, she's so focused that it's obvious what she's doing and she doesn't recognize that she's recognized. Certainly by me, you know, I'm just, Kirsten, I get it, you know. So and there's on the other side of the aisle, ironically, that understand that I understand just as much on the other side is Jeff Flake. Jeff Flake, the Mormon Republican conservative congressman, then U.S. Senate, but he overplayed his hand too, and he was like, you know, never Trump kind of deal. And you'll see Kirsten Sinema. I bet you. You don't see her attacking Trump. You know, that's just not, there's no percentage in it for her. You know, she won't, you know, defend him or anything, but she's not going to be jumping on the Me Too hate never Trump thing because that's not what's going to serve her purpose. Because she's smart enough not to do that. And so we're going to have some weird stuff coming out of Arizona. We just had a story that Governor Newsom, now that he's, through his recall election, he's come out and said, yep, it's all mail-in. You know, next one's all mail-in. Everybody's all mail-in. You know, so we're going all mail-in. So I'm going, well, you know, yay. That's going to go well. So I'm going to start. As time goes on, we have the Love Bus Liberty Tour. We got a couple of months more of stuff that we've committed to doing. We're going to be going to Oklahoma, then Virginia, then Florida, then Texas, then back to Arizona and Southern California. We got an event to do. But once we get done with this, you know, full traveling the country thing, and the biggest reason is waiting for it to become winter and get cool so I can go down to Florida and Texas because, damn, you know, I'm not doing it in the heat. And once we get done with that, then it's going to be we're back to the land, you know, looking for property. We got some experimentation to do on building techniques and planting and soil and stuff. So we've been really – we're going to some aircrete building – classes and so on over the months, and it has been in preparation for what I see is coming. And I would hope that, you know, land price would take a dump, but sooner or later, someday, hopefully it will, you know, and precious metals will, you know, shoot to the moon along with crypto and so on. But we got to go through this phase of the suppression and manipulation of everything, but sooner or later it breaks out. It always does. And it's just, are you able to hold out for that? And I'm looking for, it's going to get bad. And I'm wanting to make sure that we're ourselves and our loved ones and friends and family, there are options. And we're seeing the options. And that's one reason why we traveled the country, was to evaluate the options. And it's all, what it always is. We need to, you know, intentional community or community of sustainable community of community. And, what do I have to do? What can I do? What's your conflict resolution? Well, there are people that have thought it through, and a lot of people that have not. So I'm, you know, gleaning through all of them and talking to people and, you know, kind of placing them in different communities that need whatever it is that they want, and they want to be in that area or something. And I'm thinking, you know, the people that I want to hang out with, you know, and I don't have to, you know, live with them, you know, but be within 5 miles, you know, in the same community, you know, at the barn dance, you know, that Saturday night or kind of thing. But that's what's happening. And we lost that sense of community, you know, for the next iPhone app of whatever the hell. And now it's getting back to that. And I'm seeing it happen. And I don't know how they, then those, will come up against that, other than they're going to try and control use of the land. They're going, no, you're using too much water, not enough this, too much that, and you don't have your COVID shot. So I'm willing to, you know, a lot of the news coverage that we're going to be doing, a lot of the tech that we're going to be emphasizing, a lot of the use of Freedom's Phoenix in the show is going to be more geared towards our thriving and surviving in the future. You know, so I'm kind of excited, you know, but I'm sad, you know, and the people that I'm concerned about the most are the cities. The cities are going to become hellholes, and it's going to be expensive hellholes. So that's what I'm looking at. And election stuff is, I know it's going to play a role somehow, something, but, you know, that's one thing in the local areas and rural communities. They're really starting to come together in all kinds of different ways, including online, in opposition to these bureaucrats that are trying to control their lives. So I don't know how the federal government, or it's going to become centralized and a decree from on the high, but it's sure as hell going to be attempted. I guarantee that. They're definitely putting all that in place. So I'm comfortable with the direction we're going, but it's going to, you know, in the end, freedom always wins. It just gets really messy first. Well, this is what I'm talking about. And that's one thing when I kept saying it doesn't happen all at once, but it will happen overnight. You know, we're starting to see it's overnight. You know, in 1 year, it just all of a sudden, boom. I'm going, yeah, you know, this is what I was talking about. And I don't even think it's really got started yet. You know, this is the mandates that they're doing now is still not, you know, putting a knee in your back and forcing a needle in your flesh. When they can, they are. You know, they think they can get away with it. But that's one thing. Are you hearing mandates? You know, strap your ass down and giving you a shot mandates? You know, taking the children away from you mandates? And what do you see on the horizon, Frank?
Well, you know, watching how quickly some of this has gone, and that's, I have a turnaround question I'm going to ask you, but I think that's going to be their push. I think this is, it's beyond medicine. This is about a compliance. It's about taking sides. It's like getting a list, you know, who, and in a way, you know, and they're tracking ultimately who's going to have a vaccine, who's not. And in a sense, the people who don't get a vax, in their mind, are going to be the resistance. They are going to be the enemy of the people. They are, I mean, and it's almost like they're purposely trying to get that list. They're also, you know, setting us up into two different classes. They're also, you know, I think in many ways, I mean, whether it's intentional or not, or this is just how Marxism or fascism works, but, you know, they're separating us with economics. I mean, you're going to have all these people out, you know, if they're out of work, or one of my friends, He works for an insurance company. He works from his trailer, right? The place is like in Chicago somewhere, but he works here in Arizona in his own trailer. I mean, he's never been to the headquarters, nothing. But he was just told that he needs a vaccine in order to stay employed. And he's got a religious exemption, and even with a religious exemption, he's got to get tested twice a week and wear a mask. I guess sitting by himself in his trailer with his dog, and the company's gonna make him wear a mask while he's on them hours or something stupid. But anyway, so he's just gonna take an early retirement, you know, at this point. So you know, how many people are gonna be leaving the workforce early? Or we're just being more of a burden on the system in many ways and not contributing when we need people. So, but when you have more people out of work, you know, who are the people? The people that are resisting, whether it's political, whether it's, you know, just anti-establishment. And these are the people that the fascists don't want. They want you stepping in line. So, you know, when you are out of work, you're going to have a group of people, for instance, that may not, you know, if you're not employed, how much money do you have to contribute to your politician of choice, for instance? You know, how much money will the person have to resist? You know, if the person's not working, they may not be able to, throw a lawsuit against the company or someone, some kind of mandate. So it just makes it that much harder. You know, not to mention, you know, you're getting rid of the, you know, or the people who are leaving are those that are free thinkers. And they're going to be, you know, the vacuum is going to be taken up by people who are not free thinkers. You know, people who are just going to go along with the system or more corrupt individuals. And that is also how you get these jackbooted thugs that you've seen in history. It's almost like the people with scruples, the people with ethics, you know, the people, you know, they're the ones that leave or get ousted out. And then come the stormtroopers, and that's what is really scary of everything else. That's what I'm seeing. You know, whether it's the police, the military, the medical system. I heard about doctors that are strong arming patients, you know, in hospitals for vaccines. You know, like,
oh hell, that's been going on at pediatric offices ever since I can remember.
Well, that's true. Touche. But I heard when my one friend was talking about how, like, doctor has been telling patients, he was like watching them do it, where he would say to the patient, you know, oh, you know, we did some, you know, we worked on your knee. You need some physical therapy now. And there's a great physical therapy office with a pool and this and that and all these great tools. You've been vaccinated, right? If you have, then you get access to all that. But if you're not vaxxed, well, then you can't go to the physical therapy facility and you have to sit for 2 weeks in your bed, you know, isolated with a mask here in the hospital. So it's your choice. Which would you like? Would you like to be in the swimming pool? All you got to do is get a vax, right? So they're playing games like that. So anyway, I think ultimately the you asked me about what I think with the vaccine mandates. I think both of these factors are coming together where people are going to be forced out. You're going to get a two-class system. I can't believe I'm. I mean, you know, this is beyond economics. I mean, for the libertarians, at least for me, I was always looking at the collapse of the country economically, like the Great Depression. But the American people were still somewhat unified. You know, I have to say this is where this is 10 times worse because there's no other countries to escape to. They're all turning into the same problem, like I said earlier, with expats even moving back here, and at the same time. You know, you've got this Marxist takeover where you're the political enemy. So it makes it that much more complicated. So anyway, so when these mandates go through, I think what the Biden administration is doing now is they're going with the easier fruit to pick, which is going after large companies, 100 employees or more, right? Because they've got, you know, board of directors. And it's not just one person running the place. So if the owner is a conservative of a small business, he'll say, "Oh no, I'm not going to do it." But you know, you got a board of directors. You know, probably at least 50% of them often are going to be, you know, lefties or someone or nothing else. They just want to make money and they don't want any hassles. They don't want to slow down. They don't want to have a fight with the government. They just say, "Hey, it's all about money and our shareholders." You know, get the damn vaccine and force the company, force the employees. So, you know, that's the first area. And then, of course, the Biden administration is going to sit back and I'm sure wait for the barrage of lawsuits, which I've heard are a whole bunch are now coming together, you know, class action lawsuits and this and that. And we'll see if that, if, you know, anything even comes out of that. That's going to be, what, probably a year or a couple of years. And you know, it's not going to help someone who's got to get out of work right now. So, you know, and again, is that going to be before, after 2022? And is it going to have any effect? I don't know. Again, this is such in flux. But what I am sure of is that once they feel that they've dodged the bullet, forcing the 100 employee mandate on everyone, then it's going to go down to 50, right? Every company, it's got 50, because, you know, Biden's going to say, well, we're still not at 92%, you know, vaxxed, right? So it goes to 50. And then at what point, you know, is it, you know, everybody? It's just like, okay, you're an individual employee, you know, or worker, you're, you know, you've got to, you know.
Well, Italy has required that employers not fund or pay their employees that aren't vaccinated. This is by mandate of the Italian government. Employers are not allowed to pay their employees if they're not vaccinated. You know, wow. I'm, and there's so much manipulation socially too. You know, there's an article that we have going up today. It was from 60 Minutes. They had a Facebook employee, you know, whistleblower that they're, you know, whistleblowing on Facebook about a whistleblow about what? Well, their whole thing was is that ahead of the 2020 election cycle, you know, Facebook goes, yeah, we're going to, you know, reduce the spread of misinformation, which means anything pro-Trump, you know, whatever. And they would turn on these filters that you couldn't say or do it, certain things or whatever the hell it is that they determined was truth. And then after the election, they turned those filters off. And the point that the whistleblower is making is saying, you know, look, they had these filters to stop extremism and promotion of extreme views on both sides, which is what their business model is. It is to get, you know, in your feed, you'll get the extreme on one side and the extreme on the other side to increase engagement. But it also makes people freaking nuts. Well, what happened is after the election, they turned that back on to where, you know, they're getting the extreme, you know, views out there to increase engagement because it was a monetary decision. It was more ad revenues. It was more engagements. It was more likes and follows and all that crap. So this whistleblower is coming out. They're like amping up dissent and, you know, and controversy on the internet to make money. And I'm going, yeah, well, you know, what'd you think was going on? You know, and they want, and of course, the media and CBS is pushing this because what do they want? They want more control of social media to be able to dial in the mood of the public to whatever the hell it is that they say is acceptable behavior. Well, what the hell is that? You know, I guarantee it, got to get vaccinated, you know. So I don't see this ending any way other than there's going to be individuals that know and those that don't know. Those that are manipulative, you know, and those that are manipulated. And it's going to come down to what it always comes down to, survival of the fittest mind or something. And then it's going to be, where do you go to get away from certain things? And they've definitely did it by repatriating to America. They've left different countries that they thought that they were going to be left alone. And all of a sudden, you can't go on the beach. You got, you know, a foul 308 pointed at you. You're walking on your own private beach out in the middle of the nothing. And I'm going, all right. And I remember when this first started last year, you had this one guy on a longboard, paddleboard in San Diego out on the dock, out in the middle of nothing, in the ocean, by himself, getting arrested for being like a super spreader, going out on a paddleboard. And that wasn't a neon flashing example of what was to come. And then you have, we just had Max Egan on a few days ago out of Australia. I think he's scared, man. You know, he's like, they're going to come after any and everybody. So So I don't know if he's going to.
Who are you talking about?
Max Egan. He's a commentator, YouTuber out of Australia. And he's really popular, but, you know, he's covering the news in Australia and what's happening there. But there are people pushing back. You know, we have stories going up later today about, you know, thousands of people in the street in New York City, and you don't hear anything about it. You know, they're not covered. This is so Orwellian. This is, you know, this is Soviet Union China crap, you know, and I don't know what we're supposed to think of it. You know, what are we supposed to do? Ignore it or protest it or what? And I'm
you know, Ernie, that gets to like the million-dollar question for many people. I've been hearing, you know, which is, at what point, if ever, do you succumb to their tactics? I mean, it's the age-old question. You know, I'm not going to get in the mud with you, but then you become the very thing that you're against. So, but yet, you know, you've got an offshoot of conservatives that's growing. And I'm not talking about, you know, maybe the diehard alt-right even. I'm talking about, you know, the constituents in Congress and some others, which are starting to say enough is enough. Once we're back in power, we're going to do what they have done. And just, you know, it just you know, in other words, the rules forget the rules, because and this is, I have to say, I have ferocious ambiguity, as I like to say, on this topic, because I really don't know. I don't know. I mean, this is the question I'd love to hear from the audience. I mean, are we at the point where you just say screw it? Because, you know, half of me looks at it that we're playing checkers or chess. I mean, that depends on the analogy here, with somebody who doesn't care about the rules. And the problem is, many of people on our side still, and by all means, I'm sure you think this about me, you know, that I'm sitting here worrying about how the election process works. And you're like, God, you know, Frank, you know, they're not following the rules. This whole thing's a joke. Why are you even bothering? So I understand that you see that with people like me, and it's not perspective. But on a larger scale, yeah, I mean, they don't care about the Constitution. They haven't even read it. They don't care. And I know you're not the biggest fan, but, you know, they to them, it was written by white slave owners. So the whole thing is just moot. Like, they don't even care. And then the Supreme Court liberals have said it's a living document. You can make it up as you go. So in their mind, this, you know, all it is a bunch of conservatives that keep looking at the rules. It's kind of like you're a hotshot teenager and you think you know it all. And your parents are the ones that keep giving you these old-fashioned rules. Like, why do I have to be home at 10 o'clock? You know, it's just, and then you find ways around, and you sneak out the window. Like, that's how the left sees this. People on the right are still trying to, you know, win, thinking that we're still playing the same game. You know, it's like, how do we keep getting thwarted? You know, I keep playing the rules. It's kind of like the analogy I give with my patients is technically, it was Data and Riker from Star Trek Next Generation, but I'm just going to use Spock and Kirk for an easier analogy. But you've got like Spock, you know, can win at every game. He wins at backgammon, you know, he wins at chess, he wins blackjack because he can count the cards, you know. So he wins every game. But there's one game he can't win, you know, he kept losing against Kirk, which was a poker. Again, technically, this is a Data thing for you diehards. But the thing is, it's like, you know, Spock is losing poker. And he's like, Captain, I don't understand. I keep playing the rules. I'm keep following the rules, and I keep losing. And then Kirk turns around and says to Spock, but Spock, you know, you keep losing because you keep looking at your cards. Stop looking at the cards, you know? In other words, poker is maybe half about the cards, but it's really about the man. It's about reading your opponent. It's about the meta game. That's what poker is about. That's why Kirk could do that. And Spock kept getting hung up on the rules. And that's how I feel that our side is, for the most part. It's like, you know, and I'm not saying, I'm not trying to defend Republicans. I mean, they're a bunch of, you know what's through time as well. But the conservative base, and I would say a lot of libertarians, you know, we're sitting there, we care about the Constitution, or at least the principles. We understand about liberty. We understand concepts of history. We have all of this. And we're trying to follow the rules, hence the voting or other things, right? And we're trying to be civil, but the other side doesn't. They honestly don't care. They will tear it down. They'll find excuses for excuses. They will manipulate the news. I mean, whatever it takes. So, and when you see literally in a year or so, a few years, I mean, it's been happening a long time, but your culture just dissolving in front of you, your freedoms just being taken away. Everywhere you look, on the left, the right, you know, the banks. I mean, while I'm with COVID, not only are these lockdowns, what did the banks now, or the government, or the Fed, or was the IRS or somebody? I didn't get the full detail, but that banks now have to report, you know, any transactions in cash for $600. I mean, it was what, 5,000 or something?
Well, that's what they're trying to pass. I don't know if they actually passed it or not, but they definitely want everything.
Yeah, but just the fact that they're trying to do that. I mean, it's like, I mean, that in itself is a huge news item to push back. But they're doing it from all angles. And, you know, people are feeling overwhelmed. I think many people are just checking out. I mean, you just feel like, what can you do? And a lot of people are going to either through depression, I mentioned earlier, or they're checking out. And that's a whole other problem. Or people are going to not even bother voting because they're going to think like you, understandably. And they're going to say, hey, you know, well, you know, it's all rigged anyway. Why should I bother? So now you have people further not voting, which is just going to skew everything. So it's like you're just seeing this whole thing go. And you know, so when or if conservatives do get power in 2022, you know, that could be more of a Hail Mary than Donald Trump winning. And if so, what do you do with that precious time? Not to mention, I think we're going to be so divided by then if the conservatives win in 2022. I mean, it's possible the country breaks at that point because the left is so insane at this point. I mean, they control everything at this point, and yet they're still even angrier. You know, about Trump people and this insurrectionists and they're a danger to society and the anti-vax and they're killing us all. Like they and like I said, I know countless people who are breaking up in their marriages over this. You know, the people watching this poison from CNN and the rest, they are so just angry and hateful inside that they're breaking up relationships. And when you're willing to break up a marriage, you know, with a good person who hasn't done anything wrong, you know, you took vows to, they haven't changed anything. They didn't buy a white hat and start joining the KKK. It's like you've got a husband, let's say, who's just been, you know, working 9 to 5, paying the bills, loves his children, does everything fine. But because they're not, because the person decides not to get a vaccine or they didn't vote for Joe Biden, all of a sudden, your marriage is over. I mean, when you're seeing marriages break up like this, we're at a whole other level of how the hate that these people have. Charles Krauthammer, he had a famous quote I've said on your show, just bears repeating, which is that conservatives believe liberals are wrong, but liberals think conservatives are evil. It's a very important distinction. And that goes back to the question, which is when conservatives, assuming, you know, gain power again, you know, if this red wave and moderates all finally say, okay, you know, we'll bow down to the conservatives, right? And they'll just stop this madness. You know, do they sit back and just be a pause button until the liberals figure out and advance it again? Or do they finally say, you know, enough is enough and you take it back? I mean, I don't know. And whatever that means. Because when the left is not following the rules, well, then at what point is the right not? But then you become the very thing that they claim. So I don't know. I'm really stuck in that thing. I know for you, the whole thing doesn't matter. Just go out and get yourself some farmland and check out with it. But I think this is a question for a lot of us. You know, and of course, the media blackouts on everything are trying to disconnect us from each other, from seeing the things that you're seeing. You know, the unification of people and the attempts to try to take things back. But at the same time. Also, I guess another question, I'm just throwing this out, is how much, I know the moderates have to take a stand and take a choice, but I just kind of wonder, are there people out there that their minds can still be changed? I mean, or is everyone essentially at this point, you know, the battle lines are done, and we all kind of know. Because right before Civil War, and this is from people who've studied Civil Wars and the lead up, you have right before the breakout of violence, typically, is when the communication between the both sides completely breaks down. And then it turns, and then instead of people trying to talk to each other, you know, over the line, trying to, you know, communicate both sides, they just stop talking. And then it turns into like musical chairs where you start grabbing all the people meandering in the middle. And you're trying to just basically force everyone to take sides because you start counting your roster. How many people do we have and how many do they have? And that's the mode that this country's in right now. I mean, it's been in for a few years.
Well,
I don't know if anyone hasn't chosen yet.
Well, let me kind of comment on that a little bit.
Yeah.
I think the most telling and the most interesting conversations that we've had over the years has been about cultural norms and, you know, what people are supporting in pop culture and movies and what shows get made and so on. There's a new one. JMS is completely remaking Babylon 5 for the CW network.
Really?
So Babylon 5 was possibly the best science fiction television show ever made, blah, 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 blah. I've watched several episodes. I get it. You know, and it was all my libertarian friends were just on my ass. Oh, my God, you got to watch Babylon 5. And I just couldn't get into it because I hate episode kind of stuff where they just drag it out, you know. And that's one reason why I liked the way Star Trek did it, because even though you had a continuing storyline, each episode stood alone on its own, that, you know, it had its own, you know, reason for having it and a message or morality tale of whatever. But Babylon 5 was one of those, like, Game of Thrones things, man, in space. You know, you had to, you know, start at the beginning and go through it, and then they drag it out, and then they get, you know, the next episode. And now it probably wouldn't be as bad because you have streaming and I don't have to sit through commercials. But I can't take, you know, television. You sit there and the cliffhanger of next week, you know, Lassie will, you know, save the guy in the well. You know, it's just so boring to me. I hate that crap. But I had so many friends that I respect their opinion that they love them some Babylon 5. And for whatever reason, I could never really get why it was so enjoyed by libertarians, because I'm not really sure what the draw was. Decline that phone call. So it coming out again, I'm wondering why. You know, what's going to be, I mean, are all the actors going to have to be vaccinated? You know, what's their opinion when they get on the television radio and they get bombarded with the questions of the philosophical correct answer of the day? Because there's another story coming up. There's an NBA star that goes, I'm not taking, you know, the shot. I'm not getting vaccinated. And they freak out, you know? And you know, are you allowed to, you know, take that? Let's see, Jonathan Isaac destroys the mainstream sports media, gives perfect response over NBA vaccine mandate. You know, I'm not getting the jab. I'm not. They go, well, that's not politically correct of whatever, if you're going to suffer somehow from something of not, you know, bite me, I'm not doing it. And that's kind of a Tom Brady thing, too.
Yeah, I wanted to point out, Isaac, I talked about him on your show a couple of years ago. You don't remember. He's there from the Magic, I think the Orlando Magic. And I actually have his jersey. I supported him, and I bought his jersey, which I can't believe how much, you know, professional sports jerseys are. It was a ripoff. But the reason was Isaac was the only black player who did not take a knee during the whole, you know, Black Lives Matter thing, remember, during the Trump deal. And all the athletes are taking knees. And there was a famous picture, which I sent to you. I think Donna put up on the show, where you see it was like the Pledge of Allegiance or whatever. And all the black players were on their knee. And there was one black person, this whole row of black players, one standing up still for the flag. And that, he had just hurt his leg, by the way, right around that time. But he stood up in defiance. And then for whatever the reason, he was just not trying to play partisan politics. And so many people gave him credit. I actually supported him by buying the jersey. They said something like, I think his jersey, all this guy is like a middle of the road player. And his jersey wound up becoming, pull up the picture if you have it there. It's a great picture. But His jersey, I think, was like the biggest seller in NBA history or something, like all at once. So everyone was just blew it out. So here it is a couple years later, and here's Isaac again. He's, you know, taking the stand for whatever it is. I mean, is he an in-the-closet conservative? I mean, I don't know. But hopefully he's not. He's just trying to be professional. I don't know. And a free thinker. And by the way, before you comment on that, I just have to one more pop culture. Babylon 5 for you guys out there. Many of you don't know, but the music has an original score for each episode by a gentleman named Christopher Frank. And Christopher Frank was the founding member of Tangerine Dream.
Oh, my God.
Just had to put that out there.
Of course you did. You know, so that, well, one of the other things, YouTube bans all anti-vax videos, ramping up COVID-era censorship campaign, blah, blah, blah. YouTube will ban all, quote, harmful vaccine content, whatever the hell that means, from its platform, including claims that vaccines are ineffective at reducing disease transmission. The ban comes after a year of escalating censorship by the Google-owned company. We've steadily seen false claims about the coronavirus vaccine spill over into misinformation about vaccines in general, and we're now at a point where it's more important than ever to expand the work we started with COVID-19 to other vaccines. What? YouTube said in a blog post on Wednesday, the new rules prohibit content alleging that vaccines cause chronic side effects, that they do not reduce transmission or contract disease, that they, whatever the hell they want to say, you know. So their vaccines in general have been under, by pushing this vaccine so much, you know, people are starting to question vaccines in general, and it's having the opposite effect of on general population opinion than what they anticipated. So now they need to, you know, control the narrative is even more. So whatever control or extra money or gazillionaires or kill people that they thought they were going to do, all of a sudden the people are like, eh, I think we'll decline. But it's more than that. It's who is saying no. You know, this is one thing that I don't think they anticipated, to where you have a whole generation going, nah, we're good, we're not going to do it, and it be what type of people? All the conservatives, libertarian, Trumpers? I mean, you know, what is it that they're doing? They kill off all their own, and the only people left are a bunch of conservatives that they got to do battle with, you know, that got their mental faculties, that their children are not, you know, debilitated and sick, and they're the next generation. You know, I don't think it's going to go the way they had hoped or thought or planned. But what I am seeing is you get the Klaus Schwab types. They always do the same thing. They get some, you know, 28 to 35 year old super babe that, you know, will sit on a stage, you know, well lit in a lounge chair with Klaus Schwab sitting across from them, telling them how they're going to rule the universe, and in front of a, you know, hell, if there even is an audience, you know. And a lot of times they'll sit there just like they did TED Talks, just like they did, you know, with Bill Gates for a long time, just like they do with a lot of these people just going to tell how they're going to rule us. And they get up and they'll go, yep, and you're owning nothing and like it and blah, 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 blah. And who's listening and who cares? And they try and give this aura of legitimacy or support by manufacturing these media appearances and then putting them up on the internet and thinking everybody's going to go, oh, well, hell, I guess that's what's going to happen because Davos, you know, World Economic Forum, United Nations says, and, you know, and then you see all of these different companies that are in support of a lot of these different things. And almost always it includes the logo for DARPA. And I'm going, man, does anybody see this? You know, this is bad. This is like Hydra. You know, this is, you know, the call came from inside the house, man, get out. So I don't really see the battle anymore having to warn people or be scared of whatever the hell's going on more than just offering solutions, that there is an alternative to just being a slave. And, you know, the only option is not being a slave. Well, they're coming after you in every county, every municipality, everywhere, from everything. And the biggest thing is debt. They are, you know, they're going to be lending money, borrowing money in the name of your grandchildren, and you're going to owe it to them come hell or high water, or they just confiscate and it's all ours now, you know. And when they say you'll own nothing, they mean you'll own nothing. This is, you know, 2020, 2021, 2030, whatever the agenda of, you don't get private property rights. So this is what America was about. It's what made it so powerful, was the support of the individuals having their own property and doing what they want with it. It's called freedom. So that is the battle that's coming, that I see is going to happen. It's a philosophical battle. It's a practical battle. It's a battle. So this is where we're going. And the biggest thing is you have already lost if you're hungry. You know, when you don't have, you know, clean water or good food, you know, you're done. So if we're not focused on that, I don't know what else, because it's always going to come down to that. And I keep saying this, this will be a food thing. So I'm sitting here looking out over hundreds of acres of fields that are being focused on making sure friends and family are fed. You know, I think that needs to be replicated. You know, and then, you know, if you don't have a local market, well, they buy one, create one, stock one, fill one. You know, why? Because you have to freaking eat. You know, this is so neon flash and obvious to me, but, you know, what are we left with? I don't know. What sports star is going to, you know, take the jab or not? That's one thing. Tennis stars now are going, nope, not doing it. I mean, this is really starting to be a snowball, and that's why they think that if they can control YouTube, then they can control, you know, the thought process, as if, you know, people are that stupid. I don't know.
A couple things. First off, you know, what they're doing is creating a whole nother division line. Because keep in mind, this is, you know, they're trying to stereotype that if you are questioning the vaccine, it means you're anti all vaccines, which therefore means you're anti science, which means that you're a dumbass and your voice doesn't matter at that point. So, you know, that's how it is. You know, you're against illegal immigration, somehow you're against all brown people and you're a hate monger, right? I mean, it's just how they look at it. They can't, it's purposely twist things. But what they're doing is they're trying to corral and shame anyone who's not a conservative from avoiding the vaccine. So keep in mind, I said in the very beginning, and most nurses are liberal. Heck, most of them are like lefties and probably pseudo-socialists. Probably they are socialists, you know. And yet these nurses are one of the biggest groups not taking the vaccine. They're the ones walking out, Ernie. At the same time, you've got African Americans. You know, many of them have paid attention. It's a certain black friend of mine, you know, that you know, Ernie, and I was shocked how he twisted and went from being a free thinker until he went to nursing school. He went to nursing school in this complete Kool-Aid city. But it's amazing because, you know, black people have always talked about, you know, the Tuskegee experiments, for instance, about other injustices done to the black community from the white medical system over the, you know, over the century, probably even longer. So there's a big distrust. And a lot of you guys don't know this, but I used to do organ transplant retrievals back in the day. So I was part of, you know, the organ teams and blood donation, although I didn't do the blood donation, but I knew the blood donation guys. And when I was in that industry, you know, it was like back in the 90s, I got to meet, was it Michael Jordan? And they got Michael Jordan to be part of the campaign for blood donation. And it was a big deal getting Michael Jordan to lend his name. And I was wondering why, because everyone was talking about what a big deal was, I got him. And the reason is that black people in, especially younger black men in the cities like Philadelphia, where I was from, are turned out one of the largest users of blood donation, you know, because a lot of their injuries and shootings and all sorts of things. So they're a large user. But black people tend to, especially in the city, especially then, refused to donate blood. They never donated blood. It was like, you know, abysmal. It was like 1% or something at the time. They just never went. And it was because of the distrust of the system so much that they refused to even donate blood. They didn't want anything to do with doctors. They just didn't trust the system. They just thought they'd be experimented on, you know, what's this donating blood thing and all that. So anyway, that's why they got Michael Jordan purposefully at this big campaign to get the community to, you know, to step up, which was, you know, definitely a good thing. But I just wanted to point out that, especially if any of you are listening or African-American, you know, you're going to understand this. There's a distrust automatically in the medical system. So when all of a sudden the same government says you will get a vaccine, I mean, I come from Philly. I spend time in New York City. I know how that black community looks at that at medical anything, let alone medical mandates. I mean, and I'm surprised we haven't heard more from the black community on this. But it's coming out, apparently. You're hearing with Rihanna, not that, you know, supposedly the singer Rihanna apparently was red-pilled recently. You have, what's the other name? Nikki something? Nikki, she was the other singer.
I would be embarrassed if I knew that.
Yeah, well, anyway, she's like singer model, and she came out a week or so ago. She's like a major, you know, I don't know, pop sensation at this point with young people. But she came out talking about how the media lies, and you know, the media all of a sudden turned on her, and she's got a huge Twitter following, and she's basically telling people, hey, think for yourself. And so now they're turning on her, and all of her followers now are starting to see how the media just plays games with her. So, you know, sure, she was Twitter banned for a short amount of time. She was supposedly invited to the White House to talk. That's right, she refused to get the vaccine. And so the White House was going to invite her, and then they disinvited her, and then they lied about it. And she's like, And so it was just a bunch of crap from pop culture, but it woke up. You know, we're talking millions and millions of people who follow her on her Twitter. And she's African American, I believe, and maybe quarter Asian or something. I don't know. Nikki, what the heck was her name? Anyway, half of you guys probably know her name. So, and then of course you have now the, you know, you have the Orlando Magic and Isaac. We were just chatting about, and other players coming out saying no. So what I'm trying to get to is, you know, this is, you know, what the media and the narrative and the establishment does not want is for this to bleed into something that unifies Americans, where we can all agree that we're against the mandate. They're consistently trying to shame people, that people on the left and black people. It's like, okay, if you're against getting the vaccine, well, why are you a Trump supporter? Are you part of the racist alt-right? Is that what you are? I mean, they're just, it's nothing but a cheap shame tactic. It seems to be wearing thin as these mandates are really going to affect. So, you know, I just wanted to point out that it's not just, you know, with Trump people, it's many people on the left or moderates that are being faced with this decision, you know, and even those that are getting it, they're getting it because they're being forced into it. So think about the resentment you might have. And then that doesn't even include what's going to happen later when we find out there are problems with this vaccine. And I want to remember, I remind everybody, I just, if you have to summarize this whole debate, I mean, there's a lot to it with the vaccine, but it's very simple. It's the fact that every drug, because when people say that we're anti-science, they're anti-science. The scientific method and the way all drugs are approved in this country, because I used to work for Merck Pharmaceuticals. Many of you know, I worked for the drug companies. I did phase 4 trials for them. And, you know, there's a whole process. And to keep it simple, every drug has to go through at least a 7-year or longer, some are 10 years, approval process, you know, from computer studies. And then they do animal studies. And then they eventually do human studies. And it's a long process. And sometimes it's like Congress, where all of a sudden it gets to a certain level, and then something happens and it gets kicked back to the lower level, and they have to redo study. I mean, you know, this could be a long process. So that's how every drug goes through. And when a drug is approved, you guys all have to know that a drug is approved on two separate standards, safety and efficacy. They're two separate ones, okay? And a drug has to be approved both for safety and efficacy. Now, this is why you hear about Tylenol. Tylenol, safe and effective, you know, take today. That's why you hear it, because they're proud that they got both safety and efficacy ratings. Now, with natural supplements, which I focus on with my patients, you know, when you hear about natural supplements, they are only rated as safety. They have to go through a safety standard. They don't have to go through efficacy, which is why natural supplements are not allowed to make claims. You can't make medical claims because you can't prove it's effective. That's the point. But as long as it's safe, and, you know, most of these are derived from food, so they're usually safe. So safe and effective after 7+ years of testing. That's what every drug is. Now, this pseudo-vaccine is not a vaccine, except the J&J to be precise. But regardless, these are drugs. These messenger RNA, spike protein, blah, blah, blah. These are drugs. And none of these drugs have been going through 7 years of testing, and they have not been proven safe or effective, in my opinion. And here's the proof. Here's the proof. This is the bottom line. If it has to be safe and effective, let's start with the efficacy. Is this vaccine that they're forcing on everybody, is it effective? I mean, we're sitting here watching them say we have to take boosters now. It's not effective. You've got places like Israel that are 90%+ vaxxed, and yet now they're having breakouts all amongst the vaxxed. Harvard Business School just shut down. They're going back to online classes. Why? Because there's a breakout of COVID. But yet 95 or 96% of the entire faculty, staff, and students at Harvard Business School are vaxxed. They're all vaxxed. So now we're starting to see communities that are all vaxxed at 90%+, which is what the Biden said that he wants the country at. And yet now we're seeing communities where it still doesn't matter, right? I mean, heck, my family got it from a doctor who was vaxxed. I mean, she gave it to us. She's a vaxxed. So the thing is, we're blatantly seeing that it's not effective. Now, I'm not saying it's not a good idea for some people. I mean, the vaccine at this point, you know, you could argue for the elderly or people in high risk. In theory, you might get the virus, you might still get it, but you're going to have it less of a hit. Matter of fact, the doctors who gave it to us, they actually got through it easier than we did. I mean, because they had the vaccine. So yeah, I mean, there are some, it's an individual decision. But what I'm trying to point out, though, is that it's clearly not effective as they claimed. And how could they make such a claim that hasn't been tested for 7+ years? So if it's not, here's the point. If it's not effective, if we're seeing it with our own eyes and they're admitting it, how they have to keep changing the rules on it. If the vaccine's not effective, as they claimed, then how can they equally demonstrate or back up that it's safe? So if of those two criteria, they're failing on the efficacy, which is the whole point of it, then how in the world can they also back up or make the claim it's safe? So just on logic, it breaks down, and yet you've got a system that is pushing this. So now the question is, when everyone's forced to take this, however far down they go, you know, 50 employees, 25, sole proprietorship. I mean, I don't know how far they're going to take this. Whatever they're going to do, they got like a year and a half to ram this thing through and see how far they can do it before the lawsuits or people just stop working. But anyway, it's like. You know, at what point I think we're going to start seeing more notable side effects or problems. I really do. I think when something is this untested, look, guys, when in the pharmaceutical industry, for every drug that finally gets approved, and I forget the number, I used to know this when I worked at Merck, but it's like some really high number. It's like 100 drugs were tried, or even more, that went through the system. And most of them fail. That's why, you know, to defend the drug companies, they spend a lot of money on this stuff. Because, you know, for every drug that makes it, you don't see the countless drugs and all the money wasted on other failed programs. I mean, one of the drugs I worked on was 6 months from approval. I told you this on the show, the audience, some of you guys heard this story. I worked on a drug for flea and ticks for cats and dogs. And it was a cream we put on the dogs, and it was 6.5 years into the 7-year approval process, and all of a sudden, I have to tell you guys the story. But the helicopter came, the CEO from Merck came, and we all knew it was something important. and they said, pencils down, stop what you're doing. And we're all in the auditorium. And they basically told us they're shutting down the program because 6 months before approval, it turned out that the cats and dogs, mainly the dogs, were failing the drop test. And that was where you take the dogs and cats and you drop them from like 5 feet in the air. And they're supposed to, you know, land on all fours and have a solid gait and this kind of thing. And the dogs all of a sudden started wobbling around. So it turned out this cream, after a few years of use, began to cause neuropathies in the dogs.
Oh, my God. You know? The dog failed the drop test. That's, yeah, wow.
I worked on the project. This is not secondhand information. I worked on it. And they shut the whole thing down. And so that's a drug that went through approval and made through years and of testing and all of this. So, you know, this is why the people in the medical community are the greatest sector refusing the jab. It turns out, you know, there have been numbers on this, that the more uneducated someone is with science, the more likely they are to be vaccinated and walking around, you know, in the middle of the desert wearing triple masks. You know, they just don't understand how viruses work. But the closer you are to the medical community and the system, the more you see how the sausage is made. It's nurses. And remember, these nurses are Democrats. Most of them are liberal Democrats. And they're walking off the job not to get the vaccine. What does that tell you? It shows you it's not about politics. It's people who are in the medical industry who see this stuff. So why is it nurses are walking out? Doctors are refusing it. You've got people I know who are... people work in the ambulance community, you know, I mean, they're paramedics, you know, and pharmacists and PhDs. These are the groups, the greatest percentage for a profession that are questioning this and refusing it. That should be the biggest alarm, though, you know, and I'm curious about the pharmaceutical industry. That'd be interesting, is how many people in the pharmaceutical industry are refusing it. I mean, they know how this stuff is done. So I don't know. I can only wonder how many lawsuits will come down when this, you know, if long-term side effects are shown. And by the way, I guess I'm not going to say this on the air. Well, let me just say someone in my family was diagnosed recently with breast cancer. And this person is elderly, you know, in the mid-70s. And I don't want to get too much on a side topic, but this is just amazing. This is happening to me right now, and it you can't make this stuff up when we talk about the research on this. So this person did get the vax about 6 months ago, and which I, you know, being that they're elderly and other some other reasons, I figured, well, you know, it might be reasonable in that. I'm not going to question that per se. But she wound up getting breast cancer. Now the kicker is the type of breast cancer that she has is an exceptionally aggressive form. It's a very aggressive form. It's known as a triple negative for any of you that are in medicine. And they also tested her and found out she has the BRCA gene. And the BRCA, that's the Angelina Jolie gene people have heard about. It's with both prostate cancer and breast cancer, the hormone cancers. And you know, there's breast cancer and prostate cancer. And then there's the radical one, the one that, you know, most men don't die of prostate cancer, but some people have like the Agent Orange type of prostate cancer, the really bad ones, the high aggressive ones. And this person has a very high aggressive type that apparently has a genetic component. Now, here's the kicker. And I work in cancer, right? I deal with prostate cancer. When people have very aggressive cancers, they usually don't wait until you're in your 70s. When you get cancer, when you're older, it's usually the weaker cancers. Now, granted, there's some cancers that are very dangerous regardless, stomach cancer and such. But some of these hormonal-based cancers, they, you know, if it was that aggressive, it will take you out when you're much younger. This is where you hear about cases where people die of cancer in their 30s and 40s, you know, breast cancer. These are the type of cancers we're talking about. But those kind of cancers don't just sit around and wait until you're 70 to come out. It's the lazier cancers, the ones that have much better survival on it. And so I know this person was lamenting, you know, about, well, why me, why now? Like, how, you know, and she got breast exams every year. religiously, even at her age, still getting breast exams. Well, anyway, I didn't quite have an answer for that because I didn't expect it to come back like that aggressive. I mean, just because, I mean, I deal with this all day. I was thinking, where and why would such an aggressive cancer pop out now? Now, this person's grandmother actually did die at age 30 of a breast cancer, but no one else in the family ever in all these years has. So you sit back and I was surprised. And then her doctor was also surprised when the results came back. Even the doctor was honestly surprised, like, wow, that is very unusual for someone of your age to be having this type of cancer. So we're all in unison, and it's very atypical from doctors. Now, that said, my wife is on a physician chat group of basically, marginalized naturopaths, both conservative, libertarian, and also liberals. There's a lot of cross-pollination now amongst naturopaths who are getting over the politics of this and looking just at the medicine. So there's a really great chat group just privately amongst doctors sharing this information. And lo and behold, only like a week or so after this person told me about the breast cancer diagnosis, this came over the wire. All the doctors are sharing this. I mean, I can't make this up. I'm sorry for the long setup, but this might be worth it. So I'm going to read this to you. It's very short. It's like a paragraph.
Read what?
I'm going to read. It's from a medical study that's been floating around, and it segues right into this person's case of a cancer that's so aggressive, and all of his doctors are asking, why now? Where? Why would this cancer come out now? Where these types of cancers never show themselves late. It's earlier, or if they don't come out when you're young, then it means it's just kind of copacetic and your immune system is keeping in check. And that's why these people survive it. Now, again, it's not absolute, but it is certainly by far the rule rather than the exception. So anyway, so here, I'm just gonna read this real quick. This is from the physician research group. New evidence is showing that the messenger RNA vaccines may reprogram the immune system in ways that are permissive for cancer growth. Even more worrying, this new modeling study shows that the spike protein has a high affinity for the anti-cancer proteins, the P53 and the BRCA1/2 markers. These data show that it is likely that the spike protein, which is produced by the vaccines, may be binding to and inactivating these tumor suppressor genes in the body. P53 is perhaps the gene whose activity is the most important in the body for preventing cancer. Its role is to make sure that all damage to DNA has been properly repaired prior to cell division. If damage is too extensive to be repaired, it signals the cell to commit suicide. BRCA 1 and 2 play a similar role in breast tissue. Clearly, the inactivation of these genes will lead to cells of DNA mutations continuing to divide and prosper, one of the most important steps in the development of cancer. More research to determine if these interactions are actually taking place in the cells of people with COVID or who have been vaccinated is urgently needed. Anyway, thanks for letting me read that. I know reading on the air is like the cardinal sin, but the citation on that, I can get that through Savarda on that. But it's just fascinating that this came out literally weeks after this person, my family, is getting hit with this cancer that all we as doctors don't understand why this thing would present itself now when you understand the genetics behind it. And here she had 6 months ago had the vax. I mean, she got it done, and here 6 months later, and suddenly, she's testing herself, does her own breast exam, and within like 4 months after the vaccine, all of a sudden here's a lump. Now, can I make the exact correlation? That's what it is. No, the system is going to say, oh, you can't make that correlation. But just like what's happening with Andrew, who was talking about these people, he knows a nurse from his facility who was forced to get the vaccine. She didn't want to take it. She did it anyway. And then she wound up getting hemiparalysis and Bell's palsy. I mean, she's like has a form of paralysis. Single mom, has a 4-year-old girl, just like I do. I don't know how she's surviving with it. And then the medical system, her boss essentially told her, begging her or demanding that she not talk about it, that she does, that she doesn't post it on her site, and basically being censored by her, her work, because they said, well, it might discourage other people from getting the vaccine. Like, duh. Right. So many of these effects that are happening, you're not hearing about. And you might say that's where the YouTube thing comes in. Now, the last thing I want to point out, and kind of mention none of these points I'm putting together, is the YouTube censorship. Now, I am not defending YouTube at all. I think they're, you know, bastards and everything that they've been doing and violating Section 230. And I can go all day on it. People on the show know my feelings. But to be fair, you know, this YouTube censorship is not as, at least for now, and we'll assume they follow their rules, it's not as sweeping as I initially thought when I heard about it. I was on a channel the other day where they actually went through and read the entire new guidelines. And look, at the end of the day, you know, freedom of thought, freedom of speech, not to mention Section 230, they're a public forum, you should be allowed to say what you want. Boom. I mean, a done story. But what they are apparently doing is, at least starting now, is they're just trying to get rid of the sites that they believe are making absolutist statements. So if you're saying that the vaccine is definitely going to harm you, or if you get the vaccine, you're definitely going to get breast cancer or something, if you misinterpret what I was just talking about earlier. Sites that are using absolute attitudes. According to them, there are still these things that are permissible. Aren't they nice? But these are things which, honestly, I think more common sense. Now, again, I'm for, you know, freedom of ideas, say what you want. But, you know, they're trying to herald to rope it in on both sides, apparently. For instance, you can't say that all vaccines are bad and they're all, you know, all vaccines are bad for you. Now, I know there's people in our, you know, community that would probably believe that and think that, and that's fine. But I'm just saying they don't want channels where you just say all vaccines are bad. On the flip side, they also included that they don't want anyone saying you're equally banned if you say that all vaccines are good and not acknowledge that sometimes there's problems. They actually said that in their guidelines. So they're at least trying to appear fair in the fact that they're just going for these more absolute things. For instance, you can't talk about policy. You can still talk about the policy issues with COVID restrictions, which that was surprising. I thought you couldn't even talk about that. But apparently, you know, the debate on COVID restrictions is still open. And also, if you have negative experiences with COVID, so if you yourself, you know, like what I'm talking about right now, if I made a YouTube video on this, according to them, according to what they read, is I could talk about my experience. Now, maybe I couldn't if I'm talking about someone else's. I think maybe they might be even more strict, but they did say that you can talk about your own experiences. What they don't want is, they said, if you have a channel that focuses on it, then, you know, they don't want you just using other people's examples, because they think you're just going to make it up and skew it. So, you know, look, at the end of the day, it's messy. It's not going to work. It's just going to irritate people, and they're going to keep drawing the line and crossing the line. But in theory, though, it's according to them, it's not that you can't mention it at all. It's they just don't want absolutist conversations or channels that are just making claims, you know, just very monolithic. So anyway, it still sucks, but, you know, just wanted to clarify.
Well, we gotta wrap it up because I gotta, you know, go get my shoulder work on. But, you know, what we can look forward to over the weeks that are coming here is us focusing more on, I'm thinking, solutions, not just locally but internationally. I'm starting to, you know, come out of my, you know, illness fog here. I just haven't been diligent in looking at everything all the time because I'm just, you know, been sick. But, you know, I'm feeling pretty good now. So I'm going, all right, well, now I got natural immunity for whatever the hell it was I had. And I'm ready to start focusing on the next phase of the Love Bus Liberty Tour, which is, you know, a lot of what we've been doing behind the scenes anyway is solutions. And when we get back, by the time we circle back by Thanksgiving to Arizona, we're going to be needing, even if we got to rent a place for a while, I need to get on a big giant piece of ground, of concrete, of testing different materials on building the houses of here we go. And I'm, you know, fortunately the weather's nice in the winter there, and then when it hits spring up here and us looking for land around Arizona, we're in the next phase of surviving this thing and thriving, and it coming out of it with the future of my grandchildren secured and, you know, leave me alone as them. So I, you know, what kind of weird stuff we got to look at? One, it's going to be the economy, the U.S. dollar, the Biden administration. What the hell is going to happen with that and Kamala and Hillary, you know, Trump doing it. I mean, so I can't really emphasize enough, give a crap on politics, but there's going to need to be that we keep breathing in and out kind of stuff. And the mandates that are coming and the federal government involvement and National Guard activation and the healthcare industry. And I mean, they're really pushing everything that we had been concerned about and been emphasizing as a problem, even in pop culture. So they come out with new Babylon 5. How woke is that going to be? You know? So I'm just, interesting times, I guarantee it. And Frank and I will keep discussing it, and it'll be, you know, entertainment, maybe informative and give you a perspective. But I tell you, don't be waiting. You know, you need to get ready and, you know, store up some food and guns and ammo, you know, may be better than not, but, you know, start with the food thing. I guarantee it. Hey, thanks for hanging out with me, Frank.
Sure, no problem. We'll keep in touch. It was nice catching up. I'm glad you're doing better. And you sound like I was last week. There's just this fatigue it's incredible. And yeah, even when you feel like you're fine and you start doing work, then you just hit this wall and it goes, nope, you're sitting back down.
Yeah, no, I went through that. So, but I'm feeling pretty good now, so it's all good.
Good.
All right. Peace, brother. I got to go.
Bye-bye.
Bye.